Well, in the 112 test matches he played for the All Blacks, first five Dan Carter amassed a staggering 1,598 points at an average of 14.27 per game. No active player is within 500 points of his tally, and no other player with 500 or more international points has achieved a higher average per game. After announcing his retirement from professional rugby in February this year, Dan Carter embarked on a new journey. He's co-founded a business called Glorious, a platform for non-fungible tokens or NFTs, and has joined the Oxford Foundry at the University of Oxford as its first leader in practice to help mentor entrepreneurs to be resilient and capable under pressure. He's also just released another book, Dan Carter 1598, which takes readers on a test-by-test journey, mainly photographically, as he reminisces on his world record career. Kia ora, Dan. Good to talk again.
Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks very much. Thanks for your time. This transition from high-performing athlete, from sports star to retired, can be very difficult. It is interesting that you kept playing after your All Blacks career, right up to and including very recently. But people often feel lost. There's an increased risk of depression. How did you approach the end to your All Black career and the end to your rugby career?
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic because it's, you know, something that I've been dealing with. I was really lucky at the end of my career where I had a bit of time off, whether that was through a sabbatical in 2014. There was also a serious neck injury I had near the end of my career in 2019, where I actually had some time away from the game. And through that time away from the game, while I was still actively playing, even though I had a sort of setback with injuries, I was able to soon realize what it was that I was going to miss from being in a team environment and performing at the highest level, being a professional sports person. So when I decided to hang up the boots officially earlier in the year in February, I knew exactly what I was in for. And it is a challenging time, and it's different for every player, but you know, one thing that I knew that I just had to surround myself with, you know, with close friends and family to help me get through that transition. But I also had to reset, you know, so I felt like I was at the start line again. But I was fortunate enough to learn so many incredible, have so many incredible experiences and knowledge through being a professional sports person for so long that I could take into this next chapter in my life. So it was a real reset, and I'm still going through that process now. And, you know, there are times where, you know, there are parts of your day where you're like, oh, man, it would have been nice to be in a change room full of my good teammates having a laugh right now. So that was a big part that I really missed about not being in a team environment. But you just got to reset, refocus, set new goals, and really break down to, you know, what is your purpose in life now that – you know, what I felt like I was set out to do, be a rugby player, has come to a close. So I've closed that chapter of my life and really excited about the next chapter.
You forged a rugby career at a young age, and many, of course, would assume that that was a blessing and what an amazing life and career you've had, all of which is true. But equally, you were aware that others were studying or going to business or whatever, or creating a different life. Were you always aware that you had made a choice that was going to heavily preoccupy you for a long time, whereas others were pursuing other avenues? Was it always in the back of your mind?
It was, yeah. And I felt like I was the one making the sacrifices, but at the same time, I would look at it with a real sense of gratitude. You know, to be able to do what I love on a daily basis, I felt like I was one of the luckiest people in the world. Now that I've finished playing, you know, there's times where, you know, I feel a little bit maybe uneducated or don't have the qualifications academically, because I pretty much went straight from school and into playing and didn't have that university education that a lot of my friends did. But at the same time, I just have to look back and, you know, be so thankful that I was able to do what I loved. It took a lot of hard work and sacrifice to achieve what I set out to achieve. And I wouldn't change anything. You know, the world, like being a part of some of the cultures that I've been involved in throughout my career, I felt like I've learned so much, and it's really set me up in a good place to, you know, to take on this next chapter in my life.
You're not interested in coaching, which is another route that former players can take. And for you, and by coaching I mean, you know, professional coaching and ultimately national sides. For you, that wasn't a forward path, as opposed to a forward pass. It wasn't a forward path.
It's definitely wasn't an opportunity, because there's just so much rugby knowledge that I have, and I love to share my rugby knowledge with the next generation. But at the same time, I felt like I sacrificed my family a lot throughout my career, especially the back end of my career when I was playing in Japan and they were based here in New Zealand. So to take on, you know, a coaching role is a big commitment. It's, you know, if I wanted to be a coach, I'd strive to be the best coach I possibly could, and I'd put a lot of time and effort into that. And then all of a sudden, your weekends are taken up again. There's a lot of, you know, you're not sure where you're going to be coaching, what part of the world. So I felt like I really needed to prioritize my family, and coaching wouldn't enable me to do that at this stage of my career. So it wasn't of interest and focus for me in this next chapter of my career. So I like having flexibility. I like being an Uber driver to my kids' sport in the weekends. I like being around here at home, you know, for most parts of the week, and just being here and supporting my family.
Number four, I think, just a few months old, so congratulations on that as well. Did you, when you came to the reset then, and, you know, the kind of energy and drive and sense of striving that pushes athletes to the top of their sport, managing that, I think, channeling that, is perhaps a very big part of the challenge, as well as, you say, missing the camaraderie and the sheer adrenaline and highs of the experience. But when you came to the reset, what was it that you were looking for, do you think? And then we'll talk about where you've got so far. But, you know, you were looking around and thinking, where is this energy going to go now? Where is this focus going to go now? What did you feel like you were looking for?
I was repurposing. So I knew right from my very first test match, when I walked off that field, when my dream became a reality, that I was now an All Black. That wasn't enough for me. I wanted to really strive to be not just another All Black that played, you know, 2, 5, 10 test matches. I wanted to strive to be an All Black great. And to do that, you have to play, you know, for over a decade. You have to play at the highest level. You have to adapt your game. So that's what was driving me every morning I got out of bed. And then all of a sudden that's taken away when you hang up the boots and finish playing. So now it's trying to find that purpose, that repurpose. What's that drive going to be when I get out of bed each day? And I'm still working through that. And I've had some great mentors and excellent people that have helped guide me through that process and repurposing. And something I've really come to realize was my obsession for winning. You know, it was almost like the art of winning. You know, what was it that I learned through my All Black career and became so obsessed with being successful and winning, that I can take into this next chapter of life? And I really light up when I start talking about helping the next generation. I feel like at the end of my career, it wasn't the World Cup that I won or the International Rugby Player Awards that I'd won. It was the thing I was most satisfied about is the impact that I felt like I had on the next generation. I felt like I was able to inspire the next generation in a very small way, because I go back to when I was a young kid and I looked up to All Blacks, you know, your John Kerwins, your David Kirks, your Sean Fitzpatrick, Andrew Murdens, Jonah Lomus, guys like that. They were the ones that, you know, push me to want to be an All Black. So,
tell
you know, that's
what,
something.
Yeah. Tell me what you're doing at Oxford, because one of the things that you write about is performance under pressure, which, of course, is everything for top athletes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, most of us can sort of trundle along at 75, 80, 90% performance and stress, fine. It's that 98% that does you in, percentile. And you've written how you used to rehearse pressure. You'd say to your forwards in training, get offside and, you know, take me out. Put me in the situation that takes me beyond what I should be experiencing in the game. And I know this is a big focus, the sort of the red to blue mindset is a big focus of the mental training skills that the All Blacks do. But tell me about rehearsing to deal with pressure and how you are translating that to the entrepreneurs that you're working with.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example of, you know, this next chapter of my life, you know, helping inspire the future leaders of this world, hence, you know, taking that role at Oxford University to help, not teach them to be better leaders, but just to share some of my learnings and experience. And a big part of this e-learning program that I'm doing for them is around performing under pressure. You know, that's what it all comes down to with high performance. You need to be able to perform when there's a lot of pressure, and you get a lot of pressure when you're playing in front of 80,000 people, representing your country, playing for the All Blacks. So something we learned in the environment very quickly, that it was actually a privilege to have pressure in your life. And there are different types of pressure. There's pressure, a homeless person that tries to find food every day, or there's actually high performance pressure, and you need to be able to perform there. And the most successful people in the world live with pressure in their life each day. So it's actually a privilege to have that pressure in your life. So instead of feeling the burden, the weight on your shoulders, to be living this life under pressure, you actually walk towards pressure. You actually want it. Actually, I want it in my life today, because it feels like I'm on the verge of you know, achieving something very unique and special. So all of a sudden, once you change your mindset to say, okay, it's actually a privilege to have pressure in your life, it gets you excited and you walk towards it. You want to try and find those moments. And the best way to perform is actually through trainings, putting yourself under immense pressure. Like our Thursday trainings before a game were sometimes tougher than the test match itself. You know, the coaches were trying to get us in the red head. You've already talked about one example of, you know, guys, you know, testing the boundaries, getting offside, putting us in situations that we had to try and learn to adapt with in the moment. So when those moments happened in the game, we dealt with them already. So a lot of it is around just the mindset of pressure and actually, you know, wanting to walk towards that and be in those moments.
Now, the non-fungible tokens, you've delved into this world with the new business Glorious, which has been launched with others. There are many sceptics around this, but let's talk about who you are collaborating with, because it includes some great New Zealand artists. Many of us can certainly see the benefit for artists who increasingly struggle to get fair return on their work, especially in these days of the internet. So tell me a little bit more about what the NFTs are and what Glorious does.
Yeah, Glorious is a new marketplace for digital assets, and we work with some of the finest artists, musicians, and I guess my role is around, you know, sports people and entities. So it's a really exciting space, a great way to build communities. You know, you can look at the artists, you know, as a great example. They paint a beautiful painting. They sell it, and you know, they get their commission, and then the gallery on-sells it 10 years later for a huge price, and the artist gets nothing. So the way that this blockchain technology that these NFTs sit on, there are smart contracts where they get royalties in perpetuity, which is just fantastic for the artist. Another reason that I got into it is I see my children, the younger generation, you know, playing in these digital worlds, and they understand the, you know, digital assets are a lot better than the likes of probably yourself and me included. So I think in the future, you know, this digital space is going to be, you know, one for the future. So
there's a couple of good reasons. What bemuses people is that you don't actually, and just correct me here, is my understanding of it, you don't actually end up owning the artwork necessarily and having it on the wall. you end up with a certificate that confirms you as the owner of a digital asset, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, but it can sit on your wall. I mean, Samsung have an amazing motto. It's TV when it's on, art when it's off. So, you know, our artwork...
So the Mona Lisa on my TV screen, and I have the certificate for it. Yeah, I do get it.
Yeah,
I
well and truly. Yeah, I mean, you can obviously cut and paste, you know, an image from the internet and put it on your TV, and, you know, but you don't actually own that. You can't go on and sell that, whereas through the blockchain technology and the smart contract, you actually have ownership. And, you know, you can on-sell that.
You can on-sell the certificate of ownership, yeah.
You have ownership, yeah.
It's a brave new world. Many sceptics will be keen to see how it plays out over time, but I concur with you that artists not having ongoing royalties is a fundamental flaw in the system that we have currently. How does how does it split between the seller, the commission, and whatever the sort of company that's the intermediary? How does that split normally fall, Dan?
It varies from project to project. You know, for Glorious, I'd have to relook at the secondary market and the contracts, but there is a small percentage that the artist would get every time it's on sold in perpetuity, which is hugely powerful. I'm not exactly sure the numbers. And the seller obviously gets the majority of that as well. So, yeah, it's an exciting new space. You know, things are evolving every week in this space. So it's still really early days.
We may expect some volatility as we do potentially with the cryptocurrencies as well. Yeah.
Well and truly.
Nice to talk. Nice to catch up. Thanks very much, Dan Carter. And the book is Dan Carter 1598, which is the number of points he scored. As we said, 500 clear, I think, of anyone else at least, right? It's mainly, as I said, photography, a sort of a visual tour through his career, but there is some commentary on each page accompanying it as well.